The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
This is Jonathan Healy, who was actually talking when the microphone came on there. Sorry about that, Cormac. Good morning. This is the Pat Kenny Show, and it is our Friday forum in studio. We have got Fionnuala Sheehan, Ireland editor at Media House, Ireland Independent, Irish Independent even, Jennifer Whitmore, Social Democrats TD for Wicklow, and Colm Brophy, who is the Fine Gael TD for Dublin South West. Fresh and energised from the Fine Gael think-in in Tullamore for the last couple of days. Fionnuala, the Apple tax, I mean, you've been writing about this for an awful long time. It turns out that we have to take the 13 billion, whether we like it or not. And now it's become an election headache. I mean, how do you solve a problem like an apple?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually looking back at the time when this taxation was due and thinking, oh, how we really could have done with it back in those days. And that's the tragedy of this. I mean, I see Colm's colleagues in Dublin saying, or in government saying, that, you know, they note and respect the verdict of the highest court in Europe, which basically says, you know, we burst every rule around the place and gave a dodgy deal to one particular company. And you're kind of going, well, listen, this was done, the Irish state was complicit in this, and we were effectively defrauding our own people by not collecting this taxation at that time.
Which, of course, they'll say, well, we still think we might have had a case and an argument, but...
Well, tough. You either respect the court or you don't.
Which, to be fair, the government is...
is then respected. But, I mean, they're not saying, coming out hands up, saying, OK, we were guilty all along here, which is effectively what the court has said. So now we have got this funding coming towards us. We're waiting to see, will somebody else stake a claim on it? That could take an awful amount of time.
It might take another few years to stall
what
it.
What I can definitely see happening is that before any votes are cast in a general election, the sitting government will say, this is our intention for that money.
But they're going to have to put it somewhere. They can't put it on day-to-day spending, surely.
I mean, it is a one-off payment. So therefore, you look at... a rainy day fund, paying down your national debt, or specific infrastructural projects that you
You won't win an election with a rainy day fund.
No, you won't. But, I mean, it probably does allow you to look at your budget dynamics and say, well, listen, we don't have to ramp up the capital expenditure too much because we've got the Apple fund coming down the track. So there will be a trickle through one way or another into the budget arithmetic.
And here we go, Colm Brophy, the newspapers this morning, filled with the giveaways that Fine Gael are going to hand out. €20 to the pensioners, loads of extra money going towards families, and the classic Fine Gael inheritance tax wheeze that gets wheeled out on a regular basis. So you're doing everything that got us into the trouble in the first place, and you've learned nothing from when we should have actually spent that Apple money the first time round.
God, there's a good few things there. The first is the inheritance tax is something I feel very strongly on. I've been calling on this for years. It's a tax that really hits people in Dublin, and I think there is absolutely right, and hopefully we are doing something on it. Like everybody else, I don't know what's in the budget. I know that what I read in every newspaper every single day announces one thing after another or whatever. We still have to wait until, well, I was going to say budget day, but like, let's be honest, most people, the
we'll
budget
know is well
pretty much the
that,
weekend before the budget. Most people get the budget these days, or at least that's what it seems. So it is right, I think, though, that we take the proceeds of an incredibly strong economy that has... given us effectively nearly full employment, that has been one of the strongest growing economies in Europe, and that we look at how we spend that money wisely, and we can do things when we have the result of having managed the economy so well, the work that people like Pascal Donoghue did for years as Minister for Finance, and now we have an opportunity where we can see how we can spend that. And what the government has been doing, and it's been doing consistently over a number of years, is dividing between doing things like putting money back in people's pockets with tax cuts, looking after our pensioners, but also putting money aside for rainy day funds and putting money into infrastructure development and putting money on the capital side.
What infrastructure in particular?
For me, there's only one infrastructure, which is Metro Southwest.
Did you come in on the Metro this morning?
I use the bus at the moment most of the time, but that is because we don't have a Metro out in Southwest Dublin and we really do need one. But look, every TD in the country will have their pet project, will have their thing that they would like to see funded, will have the thing that they would like. When it comes to the money coming in from Apple, I think obviously it needs to be looked at by government. There needs to be a really thought out approach as to how, take account from Fiona said, in terms that there could be a complete delay in this if somebody else puts in a claim against it. So we need to, though, be conscious of the fact that the best thing we can do with that is on the capital side, is on infrastructure investment, in my opinion, but I'm just one person.
Jennifer Whitmore, the great thing about all the opposition parties as well is you can pretend that you know what you want to spend that money on as well, but overall, like, what do you think we should do with the money, and what do you make of the kites that are being flown by Fine Gael for the budget?
Oh, do you know, I'm sort of, I'm already fed up with the kites, to be honest, and I think most people are. They see them for what they are. Every single time we've a budget or indeed an election, these kites are flown, and essentially, you know, the government parties, in particular Fine Gael, are trying to convince people to vote for them by using people's own money to give back little gifts, sort of peppered around the place. But rather than making the sort of structural changes, they're just sticky plasters. Like, that's the approach that's taken. And these once-off measures, they really don't make the difference to people's lives that we really need to see.
They might get you a vote in November, though.
They might get you a vote. And people, you know, when people get them, they appreciate the little bump they get, but it doesn't really change their lives for them. And it's the structural changes that we need to see. In relation to the Apple money, look, yeah, you're right. Every TD and every party will have its own wish list. And Social Democrats want to see it go into invested in capital projects that will really make a big difference for Ireland. You know,
but
we need to have a vision.
Everyone's going to say that, though. So what capital project should we invest in? Should it be housing? Should it be public transport?
I think all of those. We heard Colm saying that, you know, he'd like to see the metro, and absolutely something like the metro. But he also said he came in on a bus. Buses aren't available for an awful lot of people in the country, you know. So even simple things, simple capital expenditure we haven't seen when it comes to public transport. So we need to invest in public transport. We need to invest in housing. Clearly, it's an issue that just is impacting every single person in the country at a different level at the moment. So there's all these, you know, we will be having a debate next week in relation to the Apple tax. But I just think it's just mad, I suppose, when you think about how much that 14 billion would have been worth to us as a country when we were first told, you know, here, take it, and we decided to fight it. And we spend 10 million fighting it. It was like a scene from Father Ted where go on. And, we're like,
well,
no,
it was a case of we may have got the money eventually. But Fionn Sheehan, the government kind of had to do that, didn't they? They had to pretend that they didn't break the law in the first place.
You had to stand by your own taxation system.
Yeah, stand by your mistake. Otherwise, the whole thing comes down around your knees. And what I find interesting is the commentary from the Social Democrats and from Sinn Féin and all the other parties in opposition condemning the government for the position they took, kind of had no choice.
Yeah, well, if you look at, you know, where this deal was coming from, ultimately a major multinational, the largest employer on the north side of Cork, an area that has traditionally suffered from unemployment and deprivation. Lost the major employers back in the 1980s. So such an important part of the fabric of the country, and also the knock-on impact that company had in terms of our ability to attract other major tech investment into the country. So you can see the logic behind it. And, of course, the argument that at the time would have been, well, listen, whatever about the taxation that we're surrendering here, we're going to make that back. Multiple times over in terms of bringing these jobs to Ireland and the taxation that we will bring in as a result. But, I mean, therein lies the difficulty. I mean, how far do you go? How do you not have any sort of moral argument there that you are obliged, along with every other country, to play by the rules? And if you look at the case that was taken here originally by the European Commissioner, Margaret Vestager. I mean, her name was taken in vain here quite a lot in Dublin. You know, somebody who had it in for Ireland, and she had a bee in her bonnet about the US tech sector and so on and so forth. And ultimately, the highest court in Europe has shown she was dead right.
Yeah, she was dead right. And the Apple, interestingly, wrote a letter to government as well this week, Jennifer Whitmore, saying we are being courted by others. You know, it's not just Ireland. And the big concern was that this was going to somehow spook companies that are here backed by the IDA. I mean, are you worried about that? That, you know, okay, now that the jig is up, could we start losing some of the companies that have been driving this economic growth?
I think, look, the deal that they were talking about, all those loopholes have been closed, and that's really welcome. I do think that there is this, we're sort of constantly living in fear of these multinationals leaving. And I think they...
For good reason. I remember being in Limerick when Dell closed and the impact that it had in that city.
Yeah, no, and look at, I mean, obviously they are provide a very valuable part of our economy and a lot of opportunities that we wouldn't necessarily have. But we also need to decide, to what extent do we want to allow them to control our economic policies, you know, our development policies? And I think we do need to be a little bit more confident in our abilities as well. Like, you know, they're here for a reason. They're not here just for tax purposes. You know, they're here because we have a very, we're in a very valuable position where we are, even geographically located between the US and Europe. You know, our skilled workforce, we speak English, which is obviously invaluable. So there's a lot of other things that we have going for us as well. And I do think that, you know, sometimes that they do try to push a little bit and just make us a little bit nervous and a little bit more, feel more vulnerable to them coming and going. But the reality is we can't rely, our entire focus cannot be based on relying on having them in our country, because we do know that that level of corporate tax that we are currently relying on, like, it's not going to be there forever. And I think that's something that we also need to be looking at, how we expand beyond just the FDI part of our economy and really look to small to medium businesses, our indigenous businesses as well, because if we don't have a good balance in that, we're just vulnerable.
I think it really is important to, a couple of things to point out. The first thing is that the system that we operate now as a country, we're actually one of the leaders through the OECD in having brought through the range of reforms in relation to taxation and how multinationals...
Yeah, we were caught, to be fair.
No, sorry. The OECD reforms are part of an international process of looking. We also have to be conscious in this country of, you know, every country has its own policies in relation to attracting inward investment. And constantly, whereas the IDA representing Ireland or whether it's other things, they're always looking to try and get in multinationals to put in place the best regimes. Some of these countries spend a lot of time and a lot of effort in doing things which we would certainly not do in Ireland. But we've been very successful at inward investment. What we now have, though, is a much stronger diversified base based on far more companies operating. So, yes, you had the impact of the likes of Dell when it closed on an area, or you, even if you had a big closure in Dublin, there would be an impact. But thankfully now, because of the really strong economic growth in this country over the last number of years, the range of companies that are here, we need to grow our own medium-sized companies, corporate, and small businesses.
And we have a corporate tax regime,
which is now reformed, which is a much more solid thing.
The bumper money that has come in, the magic money tree that has been shaken repeatedly, is traced back to three companies.
We have put in place, though, the necessary means of making sure that if excessive tax is coming in from the multinational sector, that we are not relying on that and that we are using that in a ring-fenced way to putting it into strategic funds which can deliver for future economic growth within the country.
Jennifer, I
think that's the really important changes that have been made. Because, yes, we always need to be cautious if you have an oversupply of money coming from a small number of companies, that there could be an impact on that. But we're protecting ourselves so as that impact can be dealt with.
I think the biggest risk, and government isn't coming to you know, grasping it, the biggest risk to investment in Ireland is actually a lack of infrastructure. It's companies not being able to get housing for staff. It's not having public transport for the staff to be able to get around. It's not having a reliable energy, electricity grid
and
available.
That's why we are pushing the money into infrastructure. That's actually the risk.
And whilst we may hear of all these other, you know, issues being raised, but fundamentally, until government gets that right, the issue of housing is a major, major impact on it. And we've seen that government have not gotten to grasp with that. We have more homeless now than ever before. Certainly more homeless children than ever before. Highest rents, highest house prices. So we clearly have the government clearly has to
just say, wait a second.
There is no government money going into housing. There is government money going into infrastructure. There's money going into providing probably the greatest investment in public transport, in our train system, in the buses we were talking about earlier, in the metro, which is actually on the north side, has already things. So that government has responded and put that money in
and
to
Jonathan,
deliver
if you
on
were
those
to
areas.
Ask your listeners listening in today whether they think because of that focus on government, whether there's more housing, they'll say no. More public transport, most of them will say no.
Biggest number starts and completions last year.
People on the ground know exactly what the
issue
is.
If you're standing at a Metro North stop right now, you might text in to see what time the tram is due to arrive. Fionnuala, what I find frustrating, and taking the politics out of this and going back to the citizen, you know, we're getting older, right? We're now at the point at which our generation has been in power for a little while, and we're wondering where it all went wrong. You know, I feel that we are one conversation away from a machine down the IFSC giving 110% mortgage to people just by pressing a few buttons. Have we learned anything from the trauma the country went through in 07 to where we are now? And are we about to make the same stupid mistakes again because we just can't make a decision to do the right thing?
There's a big, as this election approaches, there's a big feeling of we're back in 2007 all over again. The booming economy is keeping going.
High house
prices. We don't want it to end. When you're looking at house prices going up by 10%, per annum, you're kind of looking at going, this can't go on forever. A correction is going to come. And are we back into the debate about, is this going to be a soft landing or a hard landing? And as we know before, you really have no control over that whatsoever. I was happened to be pushing the pram around my neighbourhood an awful lot over recent times, and I came across a terrace of five houses that were being built. And then I happened to go by the auctioneer's house office 5 minutes later. I looked at the terrace houses and it said 2.4 million. I mean, actually, that's not bad, actually, for five houses. And then I said, no, actually, it was 2.4 million each.
Per house.
Per house. And I was looking at it going, are you absolutely serious? Who exactly has got this
one? And that's the ticket price. Because when you actually get into the auction, it's probably going to be higher than that.
It's a very nice, leafy neighbourhood, obviously. Can I just say, though, the fundamentals around the Irish economy are very different to 2007, and it is really important to, and the criteria under which budgets are put together and the structures that were put in place following the collapse, which now require governments in terms of how they budget and how they work that within the European frameworks, very, very different situation to what we had at that time.
You make the point whether people believe it is a different
thing.
They should believe it because
to be flippant and say, you know, you make the point, but should people believe it? People actually should, because one of the things that this country did and that Europe did after that crash was put in place, and I chaired the Budget Oversight Committee for many a year on this, was put in place things like the Fiscal Advisory Council, put in place...
Which you ignore.
Put
in place the type of regulations that prohibit governments from going on the type of splurges that we saw.
But Colm, you're actually ignoring that. They came out last week and said that you were ignoring their recommendations and they can't quite understand why you put them in place if you're not going to listen to them.
The key thing is the regulations that underpin things like the Fiscal Advisory Council and the budget parameters are there, and they stop any government of any persuasion.
Okay. Fingers crossed we never be in that situation again.
Let's
put that in abeyance until the general election and the promises that are made. Let's speak about another election that is coming up in a couple of weeks' time, the US presidential election. Fanon Sheehan, he said that people are eating cats and dogs in the streets of Springfield. And if there's one quote that's going to survive Wednesday's US presidential debate, it is that one. It was just flabbergasting.
It was, yeah. It was a great jaw-dropping moment, but you came away from that debate and a couple of things didn't happen. He didn't bully Kamala Harris, Trump, as he did with Hillary Clinton 8 years earlier. The weakness of the Democrat candidate wasn't highlighted as it was with Joe Biden only 3-4 months earlier. Kamala Harris did assert herself very well. She certainly left a lot on the table in terms of fleshing out policy positions going forward as a president, and also her own changing positions into the past. But the fact that she came out of it so well showed that, you know, I suppose the Democrats took the right decision. Trump is now backing off any second debate, which just shows it didn't go terribly well.
He won bigly.
Well, the usual stuff, the moderators were biased, and if you watched the full, instead of watching the full hour and a half, it went over a bit longer than that. It's fascinating how he throws out opinions as fact. So he will go 1 minute from Joe Biden is the worst president we've had in history. That's his opinion. Fine, you're entitled to say that. To the next minute, making a statement about the economy, which he's just plucking out of thin air, which he will just chuck out there. And I think the level of dishonesty that we have seen from him is quite astonishing. It's another debate that I've watched. You go back 10 years and we used to sit in this country in admiration at politics in the United States and politics in the United Kingdom and go, aren't they great bastions of democracy? And now we look at them and I go, give me the two lads across from me from here. Yeah. Give me the reasoned debate.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean, Cullum, it must be fascinating from a politician's perspective, because with due respect to you, you wouldn't get away with that kind of nonsense from the media here. You wouldn't get away with that kind of nonsense even from your own party. Yet your man has such a stranglehold over the Republicans, he can.
What Trump does, and he does it in a way that I don't think we've ever really seen before, is he's not treated as a politician. He's not treated in the same way as anybody else. The news organizations in the state give him such coverage because he'll say anything and he doesn't get checked on it. He makes up his own facts. He comes out with absolute... I mean, that set of comments, that part particularly the debate, was pure racist baiting of a particular part of the electorate to wind them up to his type of populist politics. And yet he gets away with it. And it gets played and played and played internationally. And I thought actually Kamala Harris did a great job in that it is really difficult to try and tackle someone who will say anything and make any point. Mm. And what's really upsetting, I think, for most of us who are watching it from the outside, is that can actually be the politics that are either neck and neck with Kamala or within one percentage point of being the next president of the United States.
And it's not even within 1%. It comes to the Electoral College and the states that win. But I mentioned to Larry Donnelly earlier some of the polling that's coming through, and there's more coming through this morning now. Reuters and Ipsos, who would be fairly good polling, has Harris up by 5 points. Morning Consult has her up by 5 points. Ironically, that still might not be enough, Jennifer, right, because he has to win in a couple of key states, or she has to win in a couple of key states.
And it's whether or not, I suppose, the people, she's going to have the time to convince people to vote for her. I mean, I think he has his very core base and people are going to vote for him, and those swing states are very important for him. So, you know, it's whether or not, you know, if there isn't going to be another debate, does that mean people won't be exposed to Kamala again, you know, and are they just going to vote for it on
because he's back on Truth Social, he's back on Fox News, where they give him clap him along when he comes out with the nonsense.
And that's it, I think. And I suppose the big fear is that if you vote for Donald Trump, you're going to be watching media and social media that sells, you know, the fact that he's winning and he's, you know, all the key moments for him. You know, it's very divisive. Mm. It's like everyone's living in their own bubble and they may not actually experience or see anything outside their bubble, you know, and that's the fear.
Do the two politicians who are in the room, are you a little bit worried that if we do go for an election, and of course you're going to tell me now, Cullum, that there is no election until the end of term. If they do go for election on the 15th of November, which is the date that's being muted, sure, all the oxygen is going to be taken up by the US presidential debate. No matter what you say, you'll barely get any coverage over here.
Oh, I don't think so. I think people will focus
Irish politics,
on the...
Yeah. I mean, it's quite amazing. If you started an election, whenever you started in this country, Irish people love politics. They love elections. They love getting involved. And yes, we do have probably a healthy, good interest in this American election or a UK election. But our own,
can I just say as well, did you notice Cullum didn't come in and say, well, no, the election's next February or March?
He said it with his eyes, Jennifer. I think it's fair to say.
I have no comment to make on when the election would be. I leave that to the Taoiseach. He does a very good job outlining what the position is.
And on that ambiguous note, we will leave it there. Thank you very much to our Friday Forum panel of Don Sheehan, Jennifer Whitmore and Cullum Brophy. Don't forget you can listen back to all of the items uploaded as podcasts on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on Newstalk.